because they are an imperial power. And imperial powers think like that. You know, I was reminded of the early Roman Empire when Britain was occupied, or the tribes that ruled Britain were occupied by the Romans. And one day the Roman governor, viceroy of Britain, Agricola, said to his people, "What do they call that little island to the north of Britain?" And they, his advisor said, it's these Gaelic tribes, it's Ireland, that's what that place is. He said, "Do we occupy it?" And the person said, "No." He said, "Well, I think we should." So he said, "But it's a very poor country, actually." He said, "That's not the point. If you leave one place unoccupied, it gives ideas to other people. They too could be unoccupied. And that's dangerous for the empire." So imperialists, even in the old days, think in these terms. And you've got to understand that. And I think people did understand it, which is why the size of the demonstrations was so large. No one believed the lies that were being spouted daily by Washington and London. Weapons of mass destruction? The only country in the Middle East who has them is Israel. They've got the large nuclear stockpile, they've got chemical weapons, and then they pretend they're under threat when every single day they crush Palestinians, every single day buildings are destroyed in the Palestinian cities, every single day Palestinian civilians, children, including children, are shot dead, and the world watches. And at the same time as this is going on, they invade Iraq, and they expect the Arab world to be happy. And this is the extent of the degeneration and the debasement of the Arab leaderships. They were unable to do anything for Palestine. They can't do anything for Iraq. And I predict that over the next decade or two, you will have a wave of new uprisings in the Arab world, which will sweep these people away. Because the new generations that are growing up are not going to take this lying down. And you know, I get fed up when I listen to people, especially in the West, commentators, saying time and time again, you know, the Arabs always criticize the United States of America, they're not critical of their own regimes. Well, most of the people who are critical of their own regimes are locked up in prison or killed or tortured with the backing of the United States over the last 30 years. But many of them, some of the greatest poets and writers of the Arab world, remain critical till they died. And I want to share something with you. When I first visited the Arab world, it was in 1967, soon after the Six-Day War, a preemptive strike carried out by Israel against Egypt and Syria, a very brilliant military maneuver. Which created pandemonium in the region, which was now, we know, backed completely by the United States, and which helped to crush the big wave of Arab nationalism at the time. And I remember going to the Arab world, to the cities, Damascus, Cairo, Amman, Beirut, and talking to large numbers of Palestinians who told their stories and their narratives, which were horrific to me. It was more or less the first time I had got this firsthand. But in every Arab capital I visited, every Arab capital, either a civil servant or a student radical or someone in the bazaar would stand up and say, would come to me and say, "Have you heard the latest poem by Nizar Kabani?" And I would say no, and they would recite two or three verses in Arabic and then translate them for me very quickly. And I soon said to people, "Who the hell is Nizar Kabani?" And it emerged he is a Syrian poet, and he had written this amazing poem, which is one of the most ferocious attacks against the Arab leaderships you've probably heard, and I want to read it to you, because it was written immediately after the 67 war. And many of the things Kabani wrote, are relevant today. In fact, they are even more relevant today, because he was writing it at the criticism of the nationalist leaderships. What he would have said if he had been alive today. He died several years ago in London in exile. And they took his body back to Damascus, because he said, that's where I want to be buried. And 500,000 people marched behind his cortege. Wouldn't happen anywhere in the West. Can't think of anyone, any writer or intellectual, behind whom's cortege 500,000 people would march. Maybe Chomsky, maybe Chomsky. And this is the poem he wrote, and it's verse 17, which completely freaked out the Arab leaders, and his poems couldn't be sung. Umm Kulthum, the great singer, the nightingale of the Arab world, was said she couldn't sing Kabani anymore. This is the poem he wrote. Hawamesh ala daftar al-naqsa, footnotes to the book of setback. Friends, the old word is dead, the old books are dead, our speech with holes like worn-out shoes is dead. Dead is the mind that led to defeat. Our poetry has gone sour, women's hair, nights, curtains and sofas have gone sour, everything has gone sour. My grieved country, and he talks of the Arab nation, that's his country. My grieved country, in a flash, you changed me from a poet who wrote love poems to a poet who writes with a knife. What we feel is beyond words. We should be ashamed of our poems. Stirred by oriental bombast, by boastful swaggering that never killed a fly, by the fiddle of the drum, we went to war and lost. Our shouting is louder than our actions. Our swords are taller than us. This is our tragedy. In short, we wear the cape of civilization, but our souls live in the Stone Age. You don't win a war with a reed and a flute. Our impatience cost us 50,000 new tents. Don't curse heaven if it abandons you. Don't curse circumstances. God gives victory to whom he wishes. God is not a blacksmith to beat swords. It's painful to listen to the news in the morning. It's painful to listen to the barking of dogs. Our enemies did not cross our borders. They crept through our weaknesses like ants. 5,000 years growing beards in our caves. Our currency is unknown. Our eyes are a haven for flies. Friends, smash the doors. Wash your brains. Wash your clothes. Friends, read a book. Write a book. Grow words. Pomegranates and grapes. Sail to the country of fog and snow. Nobody knows you exist in caves. People take you for a breed of mongrels. We are a thick-skinned people with empty souls. We spend our days practicing witchcraft, playing chess and sleeping. Are we the nation by which God blessed mankind? Our desert oil could have become daggers of flame and fire. We're a disgrace to our noble ancestors. We let our oil flow through the toe of whores. We run wildly through the streets, dragging people with ropes, smashing windows and locks. We praise like frogs, swear like frogs, turn midgets into heroes and heroes into scum. We never stop and think. In mosques, we crouch idly, write poems, proverbs, beg God for victory over our enemy. This is verse 17, which reverberated through every Arab capital, and this was the verse which was recited by the Arabs in cafe and on street. If I knew I'd come to no harm and could see the Sultan, this is what I would say. Sultan, your wild dogs have torn my clothes. Your spies hound me. Their eyes hound me. Their noses hound me. Their feet hound me. They hound me like fate. Interrogate my wife and take down the name of my friends. Sultan, when I came close to your walls and talked about my pains, your soldiers beat me with their boots, forced me to eat my shoes. Sultan, you lost two wars. Sultan, half our people are without tongues. What's the use of a people without tongues? Half of our people are trapped like ants and rats between walls. If I knew I'd come to no harm, I'd tell him, you lost two wars, you lost touch with children.
if we hadn't buried our unity, if we hadn't ripped its young body with bayonets, if it had stayed in our eyes, the dogs wouldn't have savaged our flesh. We want an angry generation to plow the sky, to blow up history, to blow up our thoughts. We want a new generation that does not forgive mistakes, that does not bend. We want a generation of giants. Arab children, corn ears of the future, you will break our chains, kill the opium in our heads, kill the illusions. Arab children, don't read about our suffocated generation. We are a hopeless case. We are as worthless as a watermelon rind. Don't read about us. Don't ape us. Don't accept us. Don't accept our ideas. We are a nation of crooks and jugglers. Arab children, spring rain, corn ears of the future, you are the generation that will overcome defeat. Now, whatever else you may think about this poem, one cannot deny that it is very strong self-criticism of the Arab nation by an Arab poet. And much of what he says is true today. And this is a lesson which the Arab nation will have to learn. And this is a lesson which the Americans are now compelling the Arabs to learn. It's very interesting that the big demonstrations which took place in Cairo are the largest since the 80s. And the slogan they were chanting was not couched in the language of religion. The slogan they were chanting was, "Where is our army?" That is what 50,000 people chanted in Cairo as the Americans were taking Iraq. Where is our army? That is the slogan the masses, the Palestinians, were chanting in Jordan as they demonstrated against the war in Iraq. What are we doing? Why aren't we there? And so what this invasion of Iraq and occupation of Iraq is bound to do is to wake up a new generation and revive Arab nationalism. It's bound to do that. How could it fail to do that? It might take time. These things don't happen overnight. Can you not hear me? Yeah? Well, I know it's irritating to me as well, but you know, I can't help it. I'm in a church. I don't know what's going wrong here, but anyway, it's very irritating. So what we are bound to see in that world is a growth of resistance. And I'll be very blunt with you. I was absolutely delighted and very happy that the Iraqi army and the Iraqi people resisted the American invasion of Iraq. Listen to some of the European politicians, it's quite an interesting situation. We had a lot of European leaders opposed to the war, particularly the French and German leaders, and the Canadian Prime Minister. They were opposed to the war. It was great. We enjoyed their support while it lasted. It didn't last too long. That's the problem. Because what is the point of opposing a war before it's begun, and then when the war begins, you call the people who waged the war and you wish them a swift victory? That's what they've done. Chirac, who denied the Americans airspace when Reagan wanted to bomb Libya, granted French airspace. Schroeder allowed German bases to be used. And they all wished speedy success to American arms, as Chrétien has also done. It's exactly the same pattern. Don't make the war, but if you make it, win it.
I don't understand the logic. If you're opposed to the war, you try and stop it by all means. You deny bases. You use every international institution possible to try and stop it, to expose these people for doing what they're doing. But that is where this is also a war of the North versus the South. And the countries of the North unite when they see which way things are going. They don't want to be left out. They want a share of the spoils. They've been naughty, and the empire might punish them or rap them on the knuckles, but they're saying, okay, we've been naughty, we're sorry for that, but we are now wishing you a victory, and please take us along with you. We've got firms too. And that is what essentially is going on today. But in Europe, the popular opposition to the war has been very strong. And I think it will be reflected in the next wave of elections. That little creep in Spain, Aznar, he will be wiped out electorally, have no doubt about it. He's annoyed his own population, and he's annoyed the Pope, so he can't succeed. He can't stay in power for too long. But a lot of these regimes will suffer. And look, the United Nations, on which a lot of people were placing their hopes, couldn't even convene a meeting of the Security Council to discuss an illegal war to which it had not given sanction. The elementary thing. They should have convened it to discuss. They couldn't do it because the Secretary General was not in favor of it. The French and Germans were not in favor of it. They didn't want to go too far. The only people who wanted to go too far in their opposition to the war were the mass movements from below. And that is why these mass movements are so crucial and so important. Both in the Arab world and in the West and everywhere else where it happened. The two people who called on the United Nations to condemn the war were both leaders of the South. Megawati Soekarnoputri in Indonesia, who said, why is the Security Council not meeting? Ignored. Muhammad Mahathir of Malaysia, who denounced Kofi Annan as a dumb waiter at the White House. Who else did? In the West, people began to calm down. Oh, now that it's happened, let's shut up. But now when it's happened is the time actually to go forward. And they were all hoping for a swift victory, the European leaders. Well, it hasn't been so swift. What is likely to happen in Iraq? They will win. I think I have no doubt the Americans will win over the next few weeks. They will set up a collaborationist government. But they will have to stay there to defend that government. Because I think what will also happen is that an Iraqi resistance will emerge, regardless of Saddam Hussein. Because the Ba'ath Party is not a party which existed just in the stratosphere. Whether you like it or not, it is a political party which had some roots in the population. The Iraqi Communist Party, one of the largest communist parties in the Arab world, half of their members joined the Ba'ath at a critical point. Others were repressed. So this is not a country where there is no tradition. And I think this tradition will lead to a resistance in Iraq. It will take time. It will be slow. They will pick off and harry the occupiers, sometimes one by one, sometimes two by two. If they are very lucky, thousand by thousand, as they did in Beirut when they went in there in the 80s. That will happen. And then the United States will understand that it's easy to win wars if you have total superiority of the air and occupy countries if you're prepared to put in hundreds of thousands of troops, but it's not so easy to actually carry on occupying these countries indefinitely.